Starting Tech News Weekly in 3, 2, 1.
Hey everybody, welcome to Tech News Weekly. I am John Bub, and here with me today is the human kazoo, John Prosser.
What? That's new. Hi, Bub.
Are you going to stick all 12 kazoos in your mouth and your nose and your ears?
Oh my God. You should have let me prepare, and then I would.
Well, you want to do it again?
No. No, to God, no.
Quick, do it right now. Right now.
No.
Do it.
No.
Do it. Right now.
I have to count them all up because the cats push them everywhere. Some of them are still in bags.
Oh.
These are in bags still.
Oh. Together. You have them still sanitized.
I'll play one for you.
we need to change
the Tech News Weekly like theme song to the kazoo.
You want to record the new one? I'm looking for one.
You are? Okay. Yeah, let me know. I mean, I need to get into a studio and stuff, you know?
So, yeah. Okay.
Be professional.
I'll do that.
Only the best for you.
Well, it's been quite the week for news this week. We had WWDC from Apple. And we also had Microsoft at E3 on the same day, practically at the same time, and just a whole bunch of news this week. And I just didn't want to take off this week because there's so much news.
This week.
Yeah.
Feels like so long ago.
I know, doesn't it?
We streamed live throughout the entire event.
We did, and I didn't post it, and you even recorded something afterwards and didn't post it.
I know. That's weird. Yeah, I recorded like a full recap, and then I decided that it was too negative, and people were just going to hate me because no matter what you say, if you talk bad about Apple, you're wrong.
Well, here's your chance to make it right.
No. It was still bad, Bub. It was still bad. What did you think? Since you didn't post the live stream, what did you think?
It was an interesting event. Apparently some people were upset that there wasn't any sort of hardware announcement, and I'm like, typically it's a developer conference that's focused on software. Yes, there has been years past where we've gotten hardware announcements, but I'm fine with there not being a hardware announcements.
You really think about it, like, I guess there used to be in past years a few hardware announcements at WWDC events, but they have so many events now that like hardware announcements are spread out throughout the year now. They don't have to stuff everything in WWDC.
Well, they just had that event back in March. So they have March, they have June, and then they have one in September.
September, October.
Yeah. So I don't think it's that big of a deal that they didn't announce anything for hardware, but this was one of the events that, you know, we weren't expecting a lot in terms of anything significant. There was not going to be any significant improvements in terms of software or hardware. It's mainly improvements to stuff that we already have. You know, we're not going to get any huge new features. It was just stuff that we've had for the past couple of years, and we're at this stage now where technology has in a way slowed, where we're no longer doing a TikTok cycle, and it's become a 3-year cycle for refinements. And this is something that Intel has started doing, where, you know, they had this TikTok cycle, you know, they introduce a new generation, and then the second year they would refine that generation. Well, now they're this is applying to, you know, a lot of technology today, where you introduce a new generation and then you spend the next 2 years refining that generation. And then, you know, that third or fourth year, you're actually introducing a new generation.
Right. And everything nowadays is so incremental. And if you really think about it, if you care about, like, a software experience, that's good. Instead of like releasing something completely different each year, you know, it's nice to take some time and really kind of fine tune everything. And we saw Google really start to take that approach where with Android, instead of major changes, everything's incremental, because Android had a history of introducing brand new features that were so crazy and good for the consumer and so fun, but they didn't work. So
yeah,
and that's where Apple did things really well, where they kind of took things slowly and they only released stuff when they thought it was ready. And that's why half of Apple's stuff always works better than you'll see on Android. Like, it's just more reliable because they take more time to fine tune it. They're not in such a hurry. And Google's even doing that now with Android, where it's less about the drastic changes in design and everything like that. And it's just about fine tuning everything, making things more reliable. And I think that ultimately is better for everyone instead of just these massive changes. I mean, I mentioned this time and time again on Tech News Weekly as an example, but like, everyone thinks that no one's innovating or Apple's not innovating and nothing's moving quickly for anyone. But when you think about it, like, we are a whole different subset of people, where the average consumer gets turned off by a lot of change because it's not familiar anymore and they don't know how to use it. And I always use Windows 8 as an example.
Windows 8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with what everyone's doing.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the stuff they announced. They had basically four main categories. They went by tvOS, watchOS, macOS, and iOS 10. They basically just talked about their main operating systems. Let's hit up tvOS first, because that's what I haven't noticed. We'll just go in order, and it'll just be easier that way. So for tvOS, which is something that they introduced, I believe, less than a year ago with the new fourth generation Apple TV. So there really wasn't a whole lot there to do, but they did some significant stuff that really did improve tvOS. They have a new remote app for the iPhone. They have new apps arriving, including Sling TV, Fox Sports, a French streaming service by the name of Molotov, and Minecraft Story Mode game. You can also use Siri to tune into TV channels such as ESPN and Disney, which is really cool. There's also a new dark theme, which is great because that white theme was, you know, if you're in a dark environment, that white, it's just blinding.
Right.
So it's nice that they made this new dark theme. And then they also did this thing, a new single. What's that?
I wish they would do that for iOS.
Yeah, people were expecting that to possibly happen, but they didn't, and I'm not sure why, because that would make a whole lot more sense.
Because that's what people
want. I think they did that for messages. And only messages. I think there's a dark theme.
Huh. Interesting.
But they also did a new single sign-on feature that makes it easy to sign on into network applications, you know, your ESPN and whatnot, right, without having to type out login info for each application. What do you think about all these things?
Oh, I mean, the majority of it is really nice. Like, okay, tvOS, they brought some changes that we've had with the Fire TV for a while, but it's always welcome. It's not like we should get mad at anyone copying any features, especially if they're good features. Like, for example, being able to talk to Siri to really navigate through tvOS in a way you wouldn't be able to do before this new version. TVOS is really good. I like the integration with Sling TV. That's a huge step because we've heard rumors about Apple trying to like make deals with you know, other networks and try to create their own sort of on-demand cable TV service in a way with the Apple TV. In fact, when they announced the latest Apple TV, that's what everyone was sort of expecting, is for their like full-on on-demand cable service, which is confirmed. They have been working on that. It's hard to sign those sort of deals and keep everything around a good price point for consumers. They just weren't able to do it. So I think it's a nice step to integrate Sling. And I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they eventually like acquired Sling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it almost would make sense for them to do that in terms of getting something that they're comfortable working with.
Right. I mean, especially if like they see people using it and it does well on tvOS. I mean, Apple has all sorts of money that they could just throw at it. And I think Sling TV is a really, really good service. And I think that It's one of the few times like an acquisition could really, really help the consumer, because with Apple's money and legal services behind Sling TV, I think they could do a lot of good with that.
Yeah, that would be interesting if they were to do that. This could be an actual stepping stone, including Sling TV on the Apple TV now, in terms of them, you know, forming that partnership and eventually acquiring Sling TV.
Right. So if they acquire Sling TV, everyone needs to cut this clip out and post it on YouTube and give us credit for it.
So there really wasn't a whole lot there for tvOS because, you know, it did just come out. I mean, it was still impressive, some of the stuff that they've added. Nonetheless, it wasn't anything significant.
Right.
Let's talk about watchOS, because that's something that you know, they just launched the Apple Watch about a year ago, so there's not a whole lot there to do either. They've already had two previous operating systems. They're calling this watchOS 3, and they're saying that it's faster, it has new watch faces, including Minnie Mouse with customizable skirt colors, it has a new quick access to your app favorites, it can have smart replies baked right into notifications, it has improvements for fitness geeks, and it also has something that I think you found very interesting, this SOS feature that is able to make emergency calls by holding a button and can also alert your emergency contacts and let them know your exact location.
Right. I think that's really cool. And it's kind of a nod to other services like Life Alert, which I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The only issue is I believe the Apple Watch has to be connected to your phone at all times, so your phone has to be on you. So
yeah,
what we're seeing in the app could easily also be done, or by the Apple Watch could easily be done also in an app on your phone if someone really wanted to create it. But I think the coolest part is just the fact that you're not waiting 3 years for an app to load anymore.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that this is what it should have been on launch day. But,
for sure.
You know, obviously, I don't think that was realistic to have something what they have today with watchOS 3 back when they first launched this. Because I just don't think coming out with a product like that is feasible. There's no feasible way to have a product of that caliber anymore. Because there's so much that goes on to it. That this goes back to my TikTok cycle, where you have to have all this time that you're spent creating this, and then you use your subsequent years to refine the operating system or the product that you're looking to deliver, and it's just not possible to have that first generation be the best that it can be. Over time, yes, like we're seeing with the watchOS, we've seen it improve greatly just in the 1 year that it's been out. If you look at what watchOS 3 is today, it's leaps and bounds better than what it was when it first launched.
Here's a question. I mean, obviously, when they first released the Apple Watch, they knew that the app loading thing was an issue. Like, you're not just like, oh, this is great, and then people start complaining about it. You're like, oh, you know what? Maybe I didn't think about that. They definitely knew that the loading thing was an issue. Do you think it would have been okay? Not saying would it have been better, but do you think it? Jesus, my keyboard just made a terrible sound. Do you think it would have been okay if they waited a year?
I don't know. I mean, because in some ways, they needed to get this out and at least get into the market.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at what they did with the iPhone, the original iPhone also suffered a lot of problems from being a first-generation device. How long did it take Apple to actually implement picture messaging into the iPhone?
Right. I mean, I don't think you could, on the original iPhone, you couldn't even set your own wallpaper.
No. There was so many things missing from that first generation, even the second generation. If you think about it today, I think the watchOS and the Apple Watch in particular has a very similar path to what you're seeing with the original iPhone. I think it's perfectly acceptable, the path that the watch has gone.
Right. I'm interested to see how this is further implemented in the second Apple Watch.
Yeah, when they do finally come out with new hardware for the Apple Watch.
Right.
That'll be very interesting to see, because a lot of times with Apple, what you end up doing is, what you end up seeing is, you know, they'll come out with the next generation bump, and that'll have the new hardware changes.
Right.
So that'll be interesting. Mac OS. This is something that was rumored to be renamed from OS 10. And they made it Mac OS, which fits with everything else that they're doing. Watch OS, TV OS, iOS.
Except for iOS.
So,
do you think they're going to change it to Phone OS?
I don't see why they wouldn't.
But like,
I mean, they might as well.
It's called the iPhone. I feel like iOS still makes sense.
Yeah. So they're going to call it
with the phone.
Yeah, the Apple phone.
I don't like that.
You don't like Apple phones?
No, I don't. I don't know. It doesn't feel right. I feel like to be called Steve Jobs an iPhone. Just threw up.
Well, it's a Tim Cookification of Apple.
I know. Goddamn Tim Cook.
So as I said, just as rumored, OS X was renamed Mac OS to fit in line. It's codenamed Sierra, which is sticking with the Mountain Range naming scheme. It has a new auto unlock feature, which unlocks your Mac if your iPhone is within range. It has a universal clipboard across devices. Siri finally coming to the Mac, which is a big deal. A lot of people have been wanting Siri on Mac. Not sure why, but. And you also get Apple Pay can now be used on the web to pay for purchases.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I thought was really interesting that they announced was this universal clipboard across devices. And this is basically, you know, you have your several Mac devices, and they're all signed into the same iCloud account, correct? If you do that, then you can actually copy text and links and URLs and all sorts of stuff and documents. You can just copy whatever you want to your clipboard, and it'll actually sync that to your iCloud so that you can paste it on your other device. So let's say you want to copy, you know, a bit of text from, or a paragraph from one document on your Mac to your iPhone. You could do that now seamlessly through iCloud, which is really cool, which is one of the features that I wish was more supported in Windows. I mean, I guess you could do it to a degree with, you know, Windows Phone, but who uses a Windows Phone these days?
Right. Right. I think it's really cool. It's one of those features that just, it's Apple's attention to detail, and I think it really, really works. It's a great idea. Currently I use a service called PushBullet, which I think you do as
yes.
well.
Yeah.
Which is not exactly the same thing, but it allows you to share photos, files, URLs, links, whatever, with other devices that are also using PushBullet, but this takes it to a whole other level, making it like totally seamless. Like you just copy it natively one place and you can paste it in another.
Yeah, and they were actually showing this off with, you can do this with documents and just basically anything you can copy your clipboard, which is very well thought out, because they were showing how you could copy things from your Mac to an iPad and just making these cool documents. Like they were copying graphs and everything.
Right.
I thought that was really cool.
Super cool.
What are your thoughts on this auto unlock feature that requires your iPhone to auto unlock your Mac? Is that a big deal to you that you have to have an iPhone, that they're not putting a fingerprint scanner on a Mac, that they're just going to use that based off of your iPhone? They're going to assume that you have an iPhone as well as a Mac.
Well, I mean, it makes sense for Apple because it's not a Mac feature; it's an Apple ecosystem feature, and it's another reward for being in the Apple ecosystem. I think it would have been cool to have a feature that you can unlock with your fingerprint, but it's just one of those things where it's like, we can serve a specific customer with this one device, or we can serve our core customers with an ecosystem feature, sort of rewarding them for having all, you know, Apple devices, or assuming in this case, an iPhone along with your Mac. I think it works for the ecosystem and for the Apple customer. And I don't think I mean, I understand why people might want it to be a specific feature for a single user of a Mac, but I think it makes more sense for them to kind of reward their core customers.
Yeah, I can see that. I got to remember to get into the right application because I have only one monitor. And it's harder to do this when you only have one machine. There's, like I said, there's a lot of stuff that they're doing here that's just incremental improvements. It's refinements to what they already have. One of the things that a lot of people have been talking about is whether or not Apple needs to take a bigger swing at macOS in general in terms of the design, the look and feel of macOS, because it largely has been unchanged for the past, you know, 4, 5, 6 years. And when you compare that to something like Windows 10, it's Windows 10. It has changed dramatically in the last 5, 6 years, where macOS looks largely the same. Yes, there's been some changes there, but do you think that Apple needs to make bigger changes to the design and the UI of macOS?
I don't think they need to. I think it's a pretty OS regardless. I see it makes sense that people are asking for it, especially since things like Windows have jumped in terms of design throughout the few years. And I mean, design in general, design principles have changed in the last 6 years. We've gone to...
I think that's kind of what I'm saying is that these designs have, in a way, at least what Mac does and how it looks, in a way looks dated to the designs that we're seeing from Windows 10 and Android.
I feel like maybe just because people are used to it, you know what I mean? And they're kind of wanting some sort of change. I don't think it looks dated. I can see why people want change, and especially since design as a whole has moved forward a little bit since the latest like redesign of OS X, or in this case, Mac OS. I can see why they haven't done it yet. It's probably something that they don't need to be extremely focused on right now, but I think that it should come fairly soon. Because, I mean, regardless of what Apple's doing, design is going to move forward, just like a lot of the industry is moving forward without Apple at this point.
Mm-hmm. So then, do you think that Apple should be looking in the future to redesign the UI of Mac? I mean, should they actually even go as far as creating something that's similar to what they're doing with iOS?
If you really look at how design has changed for Apple, it's been pretty interesting. So I forget what sort of design it's called, where they're kind of mimicking real world objects.
Are you talking about skeuomorphism?
Yes.
Okay. That's the design that they stuck with in recent years, have kind of moved away from.
Right, so like iOS 4 to iOS 6 pretty much is what I'm referring to, where it's like you got like a felt background, or the notepad app is actually like a notepad. The background is an image of a notepad,
right,
sort of thing, where they're mimicking real-world objects. And then they moved towards a flat design, and it's like Apple has always been like real simple. Like in terms of like fonts, colors, everything has been simple, small, and it was relatively the same between OS X and iOS in terms of design principle for Apple. And they made an interesting move that I don't know how many other people are talking about, but the redesign of Apple Music is pretty interesting, because that is not Apple's typical design ethos when they actually go about creating design. And I think a redesign for macOS is coming in the next year or two, I would say. And
do you think they have to? I mean, is that something that Apple has to do, or at least be thinking about for the next little while? They need to have this happening.
I don't know if they have to. I think they should, so they don't fall too far behind. I think features are more important than the design, because I mean, macOS is not ugly in any way. But I do think that they need to move forward with it, like I said, in the next year or two. I don't think if they don't do it, I don't think like anything major is going to happen to them, but I think they should. And I'm really interested to see what they do with it next, because like I said, the redesign of Apple Music is like different than anything else Apple has done. It's more like of a bold design. It kind of looked like live tiles in Windows almost. It's weird how they move forward with that design.
Yeah, I mean they're definitely looking to simplify their design, and I hit the wrong button, of course. So you did talk about Apple Music. Let's move on to iOS 10 then. So we were talking about Apple Music, and this is something that was actually rumored before this event, that they were going to redesign Apple Music because they wanted to have a more simplified, less confusing design, because that was one of the complaints I guess people had about Apple Music, is that in a way the navigation and usage of Apple Music was a little bit complicated or convoluted, and that they wanted to make a less confusing design for people to use. And they spent quite a bit of time on Apple Music, and they even did this entire demo. And I know you were watching with me, and we were just pulling our hair out during this demo. While
I think, you know, this around this time is when it got kind of iffy for us.
Yes, completely. This is the point in the keynote where we just started losing control of ourselves.
Right.
I think they could have actually done without the demo for Apple Music. It was great that they showed off this new design for Apple Music, and I think it was a needed redesign of Apple Music, and it's a nice redesign of Apple Music. But I don't think we needed to have a demo of Apple Music.
Right. And a lot of the demos really depend on who you're showing the demo to as well, and that crowd was not the type of crowd to show an Apple Music demo to. Like, the girl that demoed it was way cooler than anyone sitting there, and they just weren't, it wasn't a good mix of anything, and it was just awkward and cringeworthy and awful. Maybe if it was a different type of keynote with your younger, quote-unquote, hipper crowd, maybe they would have been all into it, but not this one for sure.
Well, like the music choices, like I don't understand the music choices that they chose for this demo. I was just like, what artists are they playing?
That's the tough thing about the Apple Music demos, because everyone's got a different taste, so kind of taking a risk right away.
But it was still very bizarre, the artist choices that they made for the demo. But Apple Music does have this new, some new stuff. They redesigned the tabs, and they've had this For You tab now, and it has this new feature called Discover Mix, which is a curated playlist, which is very much like Spotify's Discover Weekly. And I don't know how much you use Spotify. I've gotten big into Spotify, and the Discover Weekly feature in Spotify is one of the main reasons why I use Spotify. And I love this feature that will go and find new music for me, because that's one of my favorite things. It's finding and discovering new music along my musical taste, and just having that brought to me without me having to go and find these artists. Yes, I can, you know, find related artists and click through all the related artists and just discover music that way. But there's something about just having a playlist created for you with similar music to the genres that you like for you without you having to go and do anything. So to me, this is one of the biggest features that they've added to Apple Music that, you know, I would almost consider doing Apple Music simply because of this one feature. It's that big of a feature to me that they have this curated playlist that will go and find music that you like.
I when Apple Music first came out, I tried it for 3 months, and it wasn't. I went back to Spotify after using it for 3 months, and this is coming from someone that never even used the Discover Weekly in Spotify, or the Discover Weekly feature in Spotify. So just from like purely listening to music and using the current libraries that I have, and listening to the radio, especially the streaming radio, Apple Music was just near as good as Spotify.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I would necessarily switch to Apple Music from Spotify, but this feature alone makes me look again at Apple Music. And if I were to move to something else, I think it would be, and I know you've had several discussions on, you know, what music streaming service to use, if you should use Apple Music, if you should use Spotify, or if you should use Google Music. And this feature alone, I think, makes it worth it more than Google Play Music.
Can you get
like,
a
if I were
trial?
To switch away from Spotify, it would be Apple Music, most likely.
Are you able to get a trial of Apple Music at all?
I don't know. I don't know if they're still running the trials or not.
Yeah, that might be interesting. I would say if they are, it'd be a nice thing to try at least.
So let's talk about some of the other features in iOS 10. They expanded the 3D touch support almost everywhere, including the lock screen, the control center, and third-party apps such as Uber. Apple is opening up Siri to third-party devs, meaning you can use Siri with third-party applications such as WhatsApp to send messages or ask Siri to get a car from Uber, which is super cool that they're opening this up. That's a major feature.
Uber cool.
Oh, I see what you did there. But this is a very cool feature that they're opening up. They're actually relaxing a lot of things where you can now use Siri. And we'll talk about this later, but even messaging, they're opening it up to third parties to use these services, which I think makes iOS even more useful. This is something I think Android has kind of been king of for a while, is having all these things integrated and being able to be used. You know, you install this one application and you can use it with any other application. Right. Well, now you're starting to see the same thing where Apple is no longer a super closed off system where all their apps and anything they do natively is walled off. But now you're starting to see them come back and say, yes, we can create these APIs for developers to use what's native to iOS.
Right.
I
haven't really I've always been okay with the closed off ecosystem because Apple has always kind of moved in the right direction and done things right for iOS.
Right.
But now they're really kind of not, and they're falling off a little bit. So I think this feature is totally welcome, allowing people that might know what they're doing to have a go at some of the API functionalities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll discuss this in a minute because I know we both have some very strong opinions on some stuff that I'm going to talk about in a minute. I want to finish running down some other features that they mentioned for iOS 10. They have a new iOS 10 Photos apps that will use, quote, advanced computer vision to power facial and object recognition that allow it to automatically tag and categorize your photos, which is very similar to what Google Photos does. So it seems like they're ripping off Facebook Memories and Google Photos and combining best features of both applications.
Yeah.
They have a new Memories feature, which groups together related photos to let you quickly relive your vacation experiences on the fly, complete with a variety of music mood choices and a map of where you've traveled. And one of the demos that they showed, they actually showed that you can actually have a map that shows you where you've taken your photos, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I mean, just as a nerd, having a map that shows you all the places where you've taken photos, I think it's just neat. It's a bit of a novelty, yes, but it's kind of cool to be able to visualize that. Because they already do a lot of GPS geotagging with your photos, and now they can actually create a map based off of that, which I think is a great way to visualize all that information. Maps is also opening up to developers, which will let you do things such as book Uber cars and make open table reservations without ever leaving the application. Maps will also now warn you of traffic jams and try to reroute you, and also let you know about nearby attractions, which is something that they ripped off from Waze. A lot of people said that they basically ripped off Waze. But
yeah, for sure. Google owns Waze, right?
Yes. It's something that Apple, it's just logical for them to incorporate these features. Yes, they're ripping them off, but it's those features that everybody loves to use and finds useful.
Yeah.
They also made some changes to HomeKit. They now have their own application called Home, which serves as a single app hub to access any HomeKit-compatible device. It'll also let you do things such as watch your security camera feed right from the lock screen, which is super cool that they actually have this new Home app. And I think, in a way, this changes the game. Because before, what you had is HomeKit, which Apple created as, you know, a set of APIs. You know, you can have this integration into iOS through HomeKit, but they largely left it to third-party developers to create their own application. And I think that was not the best move, in the sense that when you're creating a smart home with all these smart devices, you kind of want a single app in order to access all this stuff. And Apple, having done this now, creating this single application to access all of these smart appliances, I think makes way more sense than having a separate application for each device. If that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, it's going to make it so much easier for people to go ahead and create a smart home. Now that they don't have to learn each application and figure out, as long as it says it's HomeKit compliant or home compliant, it's just going to work with your iOS device. And I think that's a huge deal. It just makes it that much more easier for all this stuff to get going.
Right.
One of the big things that they talked about was whether or not we would be able to delete applications in iOS 10. And they didn't mention this during the keynote, but once people started downloading the preview, we found out that yes and no, you're able to do this.
You're not uninstalling them, right? You're just like kind of removing them.
It'll let you remove some native applications. However, you can't delete them, meaning that you can remove the icon from your home screen, but the application itself will still be there. It's just basically hiding the icon. Nothing else changes,
right?
Except unless you want to use that application with something like Siri. For example, if you ask Siri to do weather notifications, it'll give you an error and tell you that you need to install weather in order to have those notifications and that integration with Siri, which kind of defeats the purpose of the whole thing. Because it's so weird that they're doing this half-assed uninstall of the application. It just seems like they could have.
I think for us, it makes sense because, like, for us, we want to see if something's like being removed. We want to be sure that it's removed. If we don't find a use for a service, then we want it removed entirely. Whereas the average consumer, I think, won't even recognize this, and Apple is kind of like playing off of them not being the smartest group of people. Whereas if they don't see the icon, it's gone, sort of deal. Like, if it's, they just don't want it to be annoying to people anymore. And people already create these folders that is like my Apple folder or the crappy app folder.
Everybody does this.
Put all the apps they don't want. So this kind of makes that go away and just makes it less annoying, I guess.
I would agree and disagree with that, in the sense that, yes, it kind of satisfies those people. At the same time, it makes a mess of things by removing these applications, in the sense that, okay, well, it doesn't warn you that deleting this application means that you can't do this with Siri. Like, it just seems ungraceful in the way that they handle the complications of removing these applications, where they tell you they remove it, but it's still taking up space on your device.
If it's so you remove an application, it's taking up space, and even though it's still there, it won't work within Siri integration?
Correct.
Okay, that's dumb. Like, I can understand.
That's what I'm saying, though.
Yeah, I can understand if like you remove it, but they have to keep it on the device so stuff still works. That's completely understandable. But if you remove it, just the icon, and the app is still there, and stuff stops working, then that makes no sense.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. This is just the way that they're handling this. I would have rather of them not done anything. I would have rather of them not given us the option to do this.
I mean, they could have just said the excuse, like, hey, if we remove any of this stuff, then stuff won't work. And we would have been like, oh, okay.
Exactly. Exactly. To me, that makes way more sense than this half-baked idea of, oh, sure, we'll give you the ability to remove applications, but you're going to end up with all these complications as a result, and the application will still actually be there on your device,
which to
a lot of people was the issue.
It's probably super easy to remove the application, and I guarantee half of the internet's issue is going to be, oh God, I removed the application, stuff doesn't work, how do I get it back? And it's going to be this process of going into settings and like finding it in your app settings and toggling it back on, because it's going to be super easy to remove. You're just going to hit an X. And then when people realize stuff doesn't work, they're going to freak out.
Yeah, supposedly you'll be able to go install it again through the App Store.
Why would you need to install it again, though? If it's there.
Yes. It just... To me, it doesn't make sense the way that they're handling this whatsoever. It's just... It seems very half-baked the way that they're handling it. So let's move... let's move on to something that I know we both have a very strong opinion on, and that's the changes they made to messages. I'm just going to run down these, and then we can rant all we want about it. Bigger emojis, 3 times as big as what you have now. Completely fine with that. I think that's logical. Stickers, just like Facebook. Yay. A feature that easily finds and replaces text with emojis, which is kind of cool. Scalable text in case you need your text to be smaller or bigger, depending on whatever it is that you're saying. Where was I? A new invisible ink feature that will obscure messages and photos. You'll also be able to send handwritten messages as well as edited live photos. Set videos as a background for the message. Third-party apps will be able to integrate much more easily with iOS 10's Messages app. Tap back that lets you reply back to a text, but it shows up right next to the text where your friend sent the text. And that's about it. I mean, I'm just going to let you go for it.
It's all way too much. Like, they're just... I hope this doesn't become like a pattern that repeats itself throughout iOS, because they're literally just adding stuff because other people have it. Like,
yes.
Stickers does really well in Messenger with Facebook, and I use those things all the time. I use GIFs.
That's because you're 16 years old.
Right. And I do that because it's just fun. It's a fun way to communicate, and I feel like that's more expressive sometimes because it's a more visual thing. But it doesn't mean that iMessage or Messages should have it just because Messenger has it. And that's not even one of the biggest issues. Like, the biggest issue for me is they're just, it's all, a whole bunch of other stuff just to have stuff. Like, adding
it's
videos.
Bloat.
Exactly. Adding videos or any sort of background behind your messages is one of the tackiest things I've ever heard of. And that's like, that's the stuff I hate.
A la MySpace.
Say what?
A la MySpace. You might be a little bit too young to remember how crappy MySpace was.
No, I remember MySpace. those were the good old days.
I mean, that's what it reminds me of. Is all the stuff that they threw into messages just reminds me of how tacky and ugly and screwed up they made MySpace with. Let's let you do all these GIFs and put all these backgrounds and change whatever you want with messages, and we'll let you make it as ugly and screwed up as you want.
That's the thing. Like, okay, so the idea for letting people customize their MySpace profile and stuff was good. The problem is you're assuming that people have any idea about design, and they don't. adding pictures as a background or something is one thing. Like Facebook does
adding
really
animated
well.
GIFs as a background, so that the entire freaking screen has a spinning flower on it.
Yeah, a lot of things do it really, really well. Where you know they give you just the amount of control that you should have, like a banner image on your Facebook profile or YouTube or something. You know, just getting your own touch of whatever is fine. But
yeah,
when people opened up MySpace, especially when like HTML was able to be added and stuff, people were breaking divs, they were breaking tables, like all sorts of just mayhem all over the MySpace profile, and it just looked terrible. Everything was broken, and it just looked awful. And that I feel like that's what they're doing with Messenger, where it's just like the design elements just go out the window, and it just slap a background behind there, and it looked terrible. Even the demo they showed looked terrible, and I can only imagine what it's going to look like when people slap their dogs behind there or something.
They spent nearly 15 minutes talking about messaging and showing these features off.
And it doesn't.
And after that debacle of the Apple Music demo, this was the last thing I wanted. Like, we had this rumor for Android, for iMessage to come to Android. We didn't get that. We got this crap instead.
I know. And like, it's just too much. Like it doesn't make the messaging experience better. It makes you have to think more.
Yeah, I think there's a couple cool features here. The bigger emojis, perfectly fine with that. I think that's acceptable, and I think that's cool.
The
feature that lets you easily find and replace text with emojis, as somebody that doesn't use emojis, that's useful. I mean, you can make every bit of text that you type out an emoji. That's great. Hopefully they have something that reverses all that for somebody like me that doesn't use emojis.
I've had experience just sitting there like searching for a specific emoji, and like I'll want to send one little emoji and it takes me 5 minutes to find it. So
yes.
I mean, not only will this replace words that are in your message with the proper emoji, but this could just be an easy way of searching for an emoji as well.
Yes. And I think that's perfectly fine. But then you get to that issue of this invisible ink features, which they're trying to do something Snapchat like if you send a photo, you can obscure it so that you can't see what the photo is until you press and hold your finger on the photo itself, and then it'll reveal what the image is. And then if you take your finger away, it'll obscure it again. Which this is just going to be totally abused. Let's be honest. This is going to be abused, and it is not necessarily going to be used for what Apple thinks it's going to be used for. I don't think they necessarily thought this completely through. Because in the demo, what they showed was this picture of an obscured picture. And when you tap and hold the picture, you know, it's a woman's hand with a wedding ring on it. And that's what they imagine everybody's going to use it for. When in reality, it's going to be used for Andrew Zarian to send dick pics.
To me.
Yes. I mean, let's be honest here. That's what it's going to be used for. It's just going to be abused, and it just seems one of those over-novel things. Apple has always been good at being somewhat of a utility in terms of their design and features, giving you what you need. Not necessarily what's novel and gimmicky, but what's needed. And stickers and, you know, live writing on photos, I don't think that's needed. It's neat, it's novel, but I'm an adult and I don't communicate in emojis.
Apple has always been like really good at creating features that help you think less. And in this case, these features are only making you have to think more in order to use them. Like, you have to remember that they're there to communicate with them. And I don't think that's just a weird, weird move on their part.
I think, in a way, Apple is doing themselves a disservice at this point, and they're trying to just copy or try to get back people that are using other applications such as Facebook Messenger and Snapchat.
Exactly.
In reality, yes. And, but not only that, but if you look at how messaging works by where are your friends the most? What application are they using? If they're using iMessage, that's fine. If they're using Snapchat, that's fine. Look at the downfall of desktop messaging apps such as Yahoo Messenger, MSN Messenger, AIM, etc. It's the same thing where people no longer necessarily SMS or text message through the native phone's application such as iMessage. They've now moved away to other applications such as Kick, WhatsApp, and Snapchat. Even Facebook Messenger, I think, has become and surpassed your application, your phone's native messaging application. Right. And it's not because of those features. It's not because Facebook necessarily has stickers. It's because it's more convenient to reach the majority of your friends through Facebook Messenger or Snapchat than it is through iMessage.
Right.
Everyone's because with iMessage, I mean, here's the thing with iMessage is that you have to know whether or not your friend has an iOS device and you can communicate with them. With Facebook Messenger, you can install that on iOS, an iPad, an iPhone. You can reach it. With Facebook Messenger, you can just reach it anywhere. And that's what it comes down to. And that's why Facebook Messenger is more popular than iMessage. That's right. Just what it comes down to. Am I wrong in that?
No, you're totally right. I mean, it always depends on where people are, like you said, and you can almost guarantee at this point that everyone has a Facebook account. And it's not just like who you can communicate with, it's how and where. You can get Facebook Messenger literally anywhere. Anything that has an internet connection, Facebook has made Messenger available. iOS, Android, Windows, it's available to you. You can use it. And I think that is what really helps that stand out. I'm not saying iMessage needs to be cross-platform. I'm just saying that I think they're losing focus. I've always been a fan of iMessage up until this point where it's just like,
yeah,
oh, it's just like every other messaging service, but worse. I'll just use the other messaging service then.
it's to the point where I would now think twice about upgrading my iPhone to another iPhone. But at the same time,
really?
I'm not a fan of Android, and I'm definitely not a fan of Windows Phone. I mean, there's just no way anybody could consider a Windows Phone at this point. That's ludicrous. So if I'm not interested in an iPhone and I'm not interested in Android, what smartphone do I get?
I honestly think you need to give Android a try. I was this way. I used iOS for years. I had two Android phones, like when Android first became a thing, and then people made me try an iPhone, and I had a deal with Verizon. They're like, you can. It was like a switching between Android and iOS thing, and they let me try iOS for 30 days, and I was hooked. I was on iPhones for years and years and years and years and years. And then I got kind of frustrated with the direction of iOS, rightfully so. I tried Android, and Android has come such a long way in terms of functionality and reliability. Reliability, I think, was my biggest factor with Android because from my past experience, it just wasn't reliable, whereas I knew with iOS things would just work. But, I mean, I think it all depends on how you use Android now. And, I mean, I love my phone. I have a OnePlus 2. I'm going to get the OnePlus 3, and I mean, for a split second, I thought about getting an iPhone, just waiting until the iPhone 7 comes out and buying it. But I mean, not just from what I saw, but just from what I saw is in terms of like, this is what kind of direction Apple is heading, has me worried about future iterations of iOS and a couple other things that they're doing, and I'm gonna stick with Android until Apple possibly figures their stuff out. I'm not like stuck on either side. I'm not an Android fanboy, and I'm definitely not an iOS fanboy. I want what works for me at the time, and right now Android is really, really good, and Android is moving in a really, really positive direction right now. I think Apple was just too far ahead with iOS. Everyone caught up. Apple stayed at their same pace, which was sort of slow. Everyone kind of passed Apple up, and now they're struggling.
Wait. Are you saying that Apple is now the new BlackBerry?
No, not exactly. I'm hoping BlackBerry. I want them to move with the development of technology and software. I don't want them to fall behind, which is what they're starting to do.
I think a lot of people use the phrase, this is not what Steve Jobs would do, a lot of times, and it doesn't necessarily apply to everything. And people have kind of purposely used it in the past. What's that?
I normally hate when people say that. Like, that is such yes. a bullshit statement.
Yes. Anti-Apple fanboys will use that phrase. And it's, I think, in a way, it never has applied more than it does to iOS 10.
Right.
Like, I don't think iOS 10 is something Steve Jobs would have done.
And
yes,
Tim Cook
I know
has
that.
Done such a good job normally because, I mean, Apple has never made more money than they have been making. Tim Cook really did a lot of good for that for Apple and that company, but, I mean, just the last 2 or 3 years have been really iffy. And, like, when it started happening, I was like, okay, well, they'll figure it out. But they're not figuring it out, and that's what's scary.
Yeah. So let's talk about the Xbox announcements from E3, because that was a pretty big deal. A lot of people liked that, and a lot of it was actually leaked before their keynote. So Microsoft announced the Xbox One S, and it's 40% smaller, has 4K support, and support for HDR, high dynamic range, which is something I know that you're a fan of. It comes in white. It has a new controller with textured grips and improved range and Bluetooth. It launches this August with a 2 terabyte version for $399, a 1 terabyte version for $349, and 500 gigabyte version for $299. Is this a big deal to you? Is this something that you would consider buying now that it's 40% smaller? Is that something that's a big deal?
Personally, I'm not a gamer. So I think it would. I think a dedicated gamer would be the one to answer that. Like, assuming they have an Xbox One.
So neither one of us are qualified to talk about this. Is
right,
what you're
like,
saying?
Is it is it worth it as a gamer to buy a new console? I think it is worth it. However, if you don't have an Xbox One yet, I think this is a good way to buy into it to kind of be set for the next year or so, year or two. But I think when it comes down to it, technology is moving quicker now, whereas we like software is kind of everything's kind of slowing down when it comes to innovation. But hardware is quickly evolving and moving. And I think that
gaming consoles have notoriously been slow to update in terms of hardware.
Right. And the Xbox,
I mean, if you look at the previous generation, Xbox 360, that lasted for what, like 8 years?
Yeah. And the problem was the Xbox One was already behind as soon as it was released.
Yes.
Like, they could have pushed that hardware so much, but they had a different vision for that console. They wanted it to be universal to everyone. They wanted it to be the center of your living room. They wanted everything to be plugged into it, your all-in-one device, which was a cool concept, but ultimately that's not what their core community wanted. And now it's time that they have to focus on that. And I don't think that we have that much more time with this current generation of consoles. I think things are moving too quickly, and I think that they were a little too far behind as soon as they started. So I think that in the next 2 years or so, we're going to be seeing another generation of consoles come out. So I think that right now the Xbox One S will do.
Yes, Microsoft also announced something called Project Scorpio. I don't know if you've read much about this. There really isn't that much information out there about Project Scorpio. It's going to be the next generation Xbox. It says it'll feature true 4K resolution, 6 teraflops of GPU power running at 60 hertz, and will be VR ready out of the box and arrives Christmas 2017.
6 teraflops.
So that's going to... Yeah. You noticed that too, huh? Is this a joke? Like, that is about as vague as you can make it in terms of trying to provide stats or specs about your next device, but not really giving anything away.
We have 18 like, megaflops.
Who the freak talks in teraflops? When have you heard anybody describe something with teraflops?
I feel like
hey, you know what? My mixer has 2 teraflops.
I don't know. I think that's the only thing they currently have to like to mention that's actually solidified in the hardware that they know is going to be like pushed out. Because I mean, things are even going to change between now and Christmas of 2017. I think that's the only thing that's solidified, and it sounds insane. So why not?
Absolutely, and I think that's my point. I know a lot of people are going to be pissed off at us for our opinion on the Xbox. Neither one of us are gamers, and that's fine. But I think it's safe to say that there's so few details about Project Scorpio that at this point in time, there's just not much care to be had.
This is
especially when they're throwing out terms like 6 teraflops.
This is as valuable to me as some random rumor from a random tech blog. They just started everything early themselves.
Yes. That's exactly what it is. And even when they says it's Christmas 2017, that's more than a year away. That's a year and a half away. Before this device even comes out.
If they gave us more details, maybe that would be exciting. Oh my God, Christmas 2017, we're going to get this. And everyone's excited for whatever this is. But I don't even know what 6 teraflops is.
The only purpose that this serves is to let people know that this is coming. And it's all about giving. And in some ways, this is good that they did say this. Because in the sense that if you're trying to decide if you want to get the new Xbox One S, if you already have an Xbox One, I mean, some diehard, you know, hardcore gaming fans that already have an Xbox One will undoubtedly go and grab the Xbox One S. Of course. But there are going to be some people that are going to debate whether or not they should go out and buy the Xbox One S, even though they already have an Xbox One. And by letting them know that they have Project Scorpio coming out in Christmas of 2017, that lets them know that maybe they should save their money for the next generation that's coming out in December of 2017.
Right.
That's the only purpose that I can find for saying anything at all. And, you know, to get the VR crap in there as well.
Looking at more information on a teraflop.
Oh boy. What's a teraflop?
A unit of computing speed equal to 1,000,000 floating point operations per second. What?
And the average person does not speak like that.
They're gonna with 6 teraflops.
Oh, God, that needs to be a meme now.
What the?
I know you mentioned this earlier, but you said that you're probably going to buy the OnePlus 3. And that's something that they just announced this week as well, which is going to be available for $399. And it has 64 gigabytes of internal memory, a 5.5-inch screen, a Qualcomm quad-core Snapdragon 820 CPU, 6 gigabytes of RAM, and a dual SIM card. Talk to me about this device and why you want it so much.
I'm a fan of OnePlus, and I really like their direction in terms of their business. And I think that like they add the right things at the right time. For one, I was like, when I was seeing leaked pictures, I was really iffy on the design. Because it kind of just looked like a knockoff of everything else that everyone else is doing. Just like the two-tone glass on the front, metal on the back. Just like everyone else in the market's doing. But actually like seeing the design officially closer, it's a pretty phone. I really like what they're doing with Oxygen OS. So if you guys don't know what Oxygen OS is, it's essentially a fork of Android, which is what, I mean, most manufacturers are doing that, unless you have a Nexus device which has stock Android. But usually with the manufacturer, you're getting a fork of Android. For example, Samsung being the most popular manufacturer outside of Apple, obviously, the most popular manufacturer for Android devices, creates their own software called TouchWiz, which is Android at the base with a bunch of added features. Because keep in mind, Android's open source, so these manufacturers are adding their own features. And a lot of this is what has created so much fragmentation when it comes to Android, because you have Google rolls out a version of Android, and then these manufacturers have to, once the version of Android is out in an official capacity, the manufacturers then have to do their own tweaks, whether it be in the UI, the visuals and stuff, or how the actual system works, if they add more features, if they take some away, whatever it might be. And then that goes through the network, which the network is sponsored and puts sponsored apps on, aka bloatware. And then once all of that is ready, they'll push it out, and that's when you'll finally get an update. And most people never get that. I think right now, Android Marshmallow, the current version of Android, is sitting on 10% of devices, which is crazy.
Yes.
So Oxygen OS is a good mixture between stock Android and features that you actually would like to use, whereas manufacturers are just kind of adding gimmicky weird stuff. It's basically stock Android. It almost looks exactly like stock Android, but it has like really desired features that it just make common. They're just the common sense. Like, for example, a simple one being dark mode, right? So like you can just change the theme of Android to a dark mode where it's a dark gray color, and you can add your own accent colors. It's not like completely open where you are completely changing the entire look of Android. It's just like the tweaks that make sense and the average consumer can work with, and make the system still look good and customizable. But it's pretty much stock Android with a few added features. Like, there's one really simple thing that I really, really like. Stock Android, I have to see the battery percentage on the battery of my phone. I have to see it. And iPhone really kind of spoiled me there when I started seeing the battery percentage on iOS. So when I went back to Android, they don't have a good method of doing the same thing. You can either install an app that will put a battery icon that has the percentage within the battery icon in your notification bar, but then that means you have two battery icons in your notification bar. They also have a developer option where if you unlock developer options within Android, you can show the battery percentage within the battery, except it's within the really, really tiny battery icon, meaning the numbers are super small and it's ugly. Like, you can't even see it anyway. Whereas Oxygen OS lets you change the icon that is in your notification bar for the battery. Like, you can have a circle icon. You can have your traditional, just like the vector image of the battery filling and obviously depleting. And then they have the option to show the percentage, which is that's just such a simple feature, but it works so well, and it's exactly what I'm looking for. And it's just a bunch of that sort of thing, like a bunch of little stuff. And they keep it up to date. It's the camera app, for one, is really, really nice. But outside of that, I think the Vision of OnePlus is really good just in price point alone. So the OnePlus 6, I'm looking at 6 teraflops here. The OnePlus 3.
Oh, are you? Yeah. Ooh, that's really impressive.
The OnePlus 3 is $399. $399.
Yes. And that's without a contract. That's $399 out the door.
Right. And it's 64 gigs of internal storage. You can expand it, but 64 gigs. I think that's enough for most people. 6 gigabytes of RAM.
that's crazy cool. I think they're one of the first smartphones to do this. And so that's impressive that they're one of the first to do this. And 60 gigabytes is a lot for a smartphone. My dad's desktop has 60 gigabytes.
I mean,
but let me ask you,
because computer had like 100 megabytes of RAM.
Yes.
Like, this is
my
crazy.
First computer had 64 megabytes of RAM. My first computer back in 1999.
Wow.
Let me ask you though, because this is something that I was trying to figure out and I wasn't 100% sure on this, but it talks about it has dual SIM cards. And
yes,
since you're only
I
getting
that as well.
Yeah, since you're only getting one storage size of 64 gigabytes, it says that the second dual SIM slot actually takes up the slot where the micro SD slot would go. So is there no micro SD slot on this device?
I don't think there is. In fact, like, okay, so for example, mine doesn't have, it has two SIM slots, but doesn't have a micro SD slot. And it already has 64 gigs of internal storage, so I think that's enough. I think if storage was lower, then I think we'd really have a right to complain that there's no expandable storage. But here's, and I do this, so here's where this is like really beneficial when it comes to dual SIM cards. You can create sort of your own plan. So with the OnePlus and with most phones that take dual SIMs, you can designate what SIM to what. So you can have one SIM designated specifically for talk and text and another one specifically for data.
Okay.
Which is really, really cool. So like if you don't do a lot of talk and text, you know, you can get like a really small plan for that and pay more for your data and end up paying $20 a month for your entire like custom plan. And it also works for people like that need a work phone and a personal phone. You don't have to do that anymore. You could just install both SIMs in one phone, and when you go to make a call, you can designate which SIM that's coming from and which phone number you're using. So I think stuff like that is really cool within these phones. They have a couple more features like Dash Charge is their version of Quick Charge. You can charge the phone up to like 60% of its battery life within a half an hour. And it works a bit differently than your normal Quick Charge, where it won't like make the temperature of your phone rise to uncomfortable levels. And since your phone...
Because that's important.
With Quick Charge... Your phone usually will increase in temperature because of the power that's going into it. And then when you want to use it, it will slow down that quick charge so you don't get burned. That's how most quick charge technologies work. In this case, since it's not really increasing the temperature of your phone, you can still use your phone and it will continue to quick charge the phone while you're using it. So it's just like small things like that that really make sense. There's a few other like gimmicky features, but like that stuff is really cool to me. And again, like I think the most important thing to take away from this is the price point. $399 is really, really cool.
I agree. The fact that it's $399 out the door and you're getting a pretty dang good device.
Right.
Which you can't say for everything else out there. We got to wrap it up because we're like an hour and 15 into this. So I think we pretty much
episode of Tech News Weekly ever.
Probably. I think we pretty much have covered most stuff that we wanted to talk about. Yes, there's some other stuff, but not as important as what we've talked about.
Right.
So where can people find you and everything that you do?
At 6Teraflops on Twitter. I'm at FrontPageTech, at John_Prosser, FrontPageTech.net, YouTube.com/FrontPageTech. That's all the stuff.
Snapchat?
John Prosser on Snapchat.
Cool. I am at Suncast on Twitter. Make sure you follow the GFQ Network at GFQ Network. Check out our website. That's where all our shows are posted, gfqnetwork.com. Make sure you subscribe to us on RSS on YouTube, especially YouTube. If you help us there, that's super important because it's just really good for our numbers. And we can possibly, the more subscribers we have, the more chances we have at getting access to other stuff on YouTube. So that's important that if you already subscribed to us on RSS, go ahead, subscribe to us on YouTube as well. And that's it. Have a good night.